talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and my guest is Howard Bloom. A number of you out there, some number of you anyway, disagree with Howard Bloom, and it's been just blasting across my computer screen, the fast blast stuff. All right, fine. Let's see you convert that into a one-on-one confrontation. Let's see if you all have the cojones to pick up the phone and convert that into the spoken word, because here he is for all of you for the next 1 hour. Let's hear from you. Certainly, we have covered a great deal of ground with Howard Bloom this evening. It'll be very interesting to see what the audience has to say. Howard, are you ready for them?
I'm absolutely prepared. I've got my bulletproof vest on.
You may need it. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Howard Bloom. Good morning.
Hi, Howard. This is Joe from Michigan.
Hi, Joe.
I was just wondering about, should we be more worried about the North Koreans developing weapons of mass destruction? Or could that be an orchestrated thing by the Chinese?
I'm a little disturbed about it because our negotiation process doesn't seem to be going anywhere, and it does seem, just for information that's emerged in the last 24 hours, as if the Chinese are using the North Koreans as a way to mount an additional threat against us, because the North Koreans know very, very, very well that if they turn their nuclear weapons on the Chinese, they will be eradicated faster than a fly on an electric grid. They will be zapped. I mean, the Chinese, I don't know if you follow China's nuclear program, but they have had intercontinental ballistic missiles and a rather large nuclear arsenal since the 1960s.
Well, would they be eradicated any less quickly if they came after us?
They might not be eradicated as quickly because we might have a lot more qualms about it. Plus, we would be afraid of destroying South Korea. South Korea, after all, is it's a hop, skip, and a jump. It's a fleas hop.
Yes.
From North Korea. And any sort of annihilation of North Korea would unfortunately destroy South Korea. And South Korea is quite a very, it's a fascinating, amazing, fantastic society.
You're right. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Howard Bloom. Good morning.
Yes, Mr. Bloom. Hello?
Yes.
Hi, I'm here.
This is Carl from Washington, D.C.
Yes.
Hi, Carl, how are you?
Yeah, there's a growing number of people out there, I don't know if you heard this yourself, that say that the only way to have peace in the world is to get rid of all religion.
Well, my wife is one of those people, and I come up against those people all the time, but remember back in the days of Leninism and Stalinism, Lenin was trying to eradicate every Marxist who was a social democrat around, and the social democratic Marxists were as atheistic as he is. So even though, that is, they were as atheistic as Lenin, so humans are going to find a way of squabbling whether we have religion or not.
But I think it's coming down to that with the stem cell research and all the terrorism we have, that religion is being blamed as the root of the problem.
Religion's not the root of the problem. It's just another way of distinguishing between the way I wear my clothing and you wear your clothing, because we could get into a spat about that. When Gulliver's Travels was being written, the big disagreement that separated the two islands of the Lilliputians in Gulliver's Travels was a difference over whether you should take your boiled egg and have the pointy end up in the cup, or you should have the more shallow end up in the cup. And I think that the book accurately characterized human nature. We will fight about just about anything.
Yes, but I don't know if that's a good analogy to, for example, the threat we face right now from radical Islam. I mean, they either want us converted or dead.
That's right. And I think you're absolutely right, because there are two different ways to handle disputes of this kind. One is violently, and the other is with words. And the democratic systems prize wrestling matches that rely on words and ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Non-democratic systems prize wrestling matches that depend on annihilation.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Howard Bloom. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, I can barely hear you, hon. You're going to have to yell at us.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's all right. Go ahead.
Okay. What it is I live in Pensacola, Florida. And we
right.
are, pardon me?
Yeah, he said okay.
Okay. And we've already been told to prepare for another hurricane. Now, we're just getting over Hurricane Ivan. And they've already told us to prepare.
Yes, they're saying it's going to be another bad year.
Yes. And the shrimpers have noticed the stream in the Gulf has actually turned toward us, toward the land and everything. And the shrimpers are even worried about it. So how does that affect global warming and things?
Well, I think it's the other way around. The question is this coming from global warming? And the answer would be these kinds of things are inevitable. They're going to keep happening over and over again. They happened long before humans ever existed on the face of this planet. And we need, this is not a short-term solution by any stretch of the imagination. My heart goes out to you, because I would not want to see my home threatened or destroyed by any stretch of the imagination, nor would I want to see your home threatened or destroyed. But the fact is that we humans have to get used to the idea that 65% of us are now living right on the verge of seas, and those seas will someday swell up around us and drown us utterly. It's happened before, it'll happen again and again and again, and we have to abandon our old system of being rooted in one spot and learn how to become more nomadic.
Or at least have an understanding of the consequences of rooting in one spot and wanting to live near the oceans.
Right. Well, I would still rather have the option of being able to take my home and float it someplace else. You know, there are simple technologies that we've got today. They're not really simple, but the those great big oil things way out there in the middle of the platforms, in the middle of the ocean,
yes,
those are immune to storms. They're built to be immune to storms. At this point, they only hold 250 to 300 people, but those are a form of floating technology that we could use to get around problems like this.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Howard Bloom. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Art. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Mr. Bloom, I'd like to go back a little earlier from your beginning of your conversation on Iraq, because I've often wondered about this. There's so much talk, rightfully so, about democracy and freedom in Iraq, but what I wonder is, capitalism usually goes along with that, and how will they deal with capitalism and the money system, too, as far as that goes? And Art, if I could stay on the line to hear this, because you're either got a carrier on you here for the last hour, or aliens are interrupting your signal.
All right. All right, Howard?
Well, I don't think capitalism is a problem, because one of the things that was going on under Saddam Hussein was small-scale capitalism. There were women who owned beauty parlors. There were men who owned shops of all kinds. Capitalism, remember, capitalism as we know it, as a system of free exchange in the marketplace, is one of the hallmarks of Islam. Muhammad himself was basically in the version of his time of the truck business.
So you don't think they'll kill each other in competition? They'll abide by a rule of law?
Well, in order to operate in a capitalistic way, you have to operate by exchange rather than by severing another person's throat. So capitalism is automatically an improvement over the sever your enemy's throat approach to things.
Gotcha. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a good evening.
You too, sir.
Thank you.
You're on the air, Coast to Coast AM, with Howard Bloom. Good morning.
Yes, sir. It's a pleasure talking to you finally, and you too, Howard. I wanted to talk about, Howard, you said earlier you were talking about the liberal and the environmentalists not having a clue as to... You know, we can end our civilization as we know it, but we're not going to end the world civilization no matter what we do. And the young lady talking about global warming kind of adheres to that. But then later you said that as far as the Democratic Party, you know, if there was a platform for more alternative energy, But I don't see that platform there, and I'm much like you in that I am a longtime Democrat who is really in the wilderness right now. And I wonder if you could expound on your topic about the environmentalists, which is right. I mean, what should we do about what they're saying?
Well, maybe it's time for me and you to do something that I know I haven't done in many, many decades, and that is get back involved with the Democratic Party. Because if the environmental movement is now embracing eco-techno-pioneering to the extent that I've just outlined with the Apollo Project, and you know that the Democratic Party's base comes primarily from labor unions, and if the AFL-CIO and 23 labor unions are now involved with the ideas of promoting hydrogen cars, high-performance buildings, solar power, biomass power, wind-produced power, and magnetic levitation trains, then maybe it's time for us to help these people along, get their message through to the heart of the party that at least I still am a card-carrying member of.
Yeah, it actually was a puzzle to me, Howard, that it was almost not even a part of the last presidential race. I mean, it wasn't even a part of the debate. It was a total puzzle to me.
But I think what you're proving, Art, with this show and with the kind of response that we're getting, even though we just barely started in taking calls, is that everybody, every single one of us knows how important the energy issue is and that it is the core issue of the day. And if that's what the Democratic Party addresses in an optimistic way with technoloss, because, we all stop dead in our tracks when we see a window full of the latest techno goodies.
Yes, Colin.
Can I ask one more quick question? What I've heard, and I don't know much about this, maybe Howard can expound on it, and I'll let you go. I hear a lot of the more conservative, more Republicans talking about this new technology of horizontal drilling. If Howard could expound on that.
Well, I must confess I don't know a thing about it.
Okay. It's basically, and I don't know a whole lot about it either, but I guess some new horizontal drilling technique that's supposed to hit more oil. I don't know. So I'm with you, Howard. I can't really comment. First time caller line, you're on the air with Howard Bloom. Good morning.
Well, can I just say one thing about that, Art?
You may.
If it's another oil technology, then screw it.
Yeah, it is. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello.
Yes.
Oh, great. I certainly acknowledge you for finding some good guests. Every time I hear that Howard's going to be on the line, it's exciting to hear.
Yes.
I've got perhaps a couple of items. One is in terms of our foreign policy, the way we conduct our foreign policy and the degree to which it actually supports the country in the long term, and I'm talking about both Democratic and Republican foreign policy, and especially our policy toward Israel, and the fact that one of the published reasons why the terrorists, most of whom were educated Saudis, were willing to end their lives bringing down the Twin Towers in New York, based on our treatment of our policy toward the Palestinians,
mm-hmm.
which was essentially a policy of supporting, if there's somebody trying to handle the Palestinian hotheads, it's Israel. And if Israel has hotheads, some people believe Sharon is one, there's nobody controlling Sharon if he's a hothead. And he's not doing too good a job controlling the really radical settlement hotheads. How is our foreign policy going to do anything, whether it's Democratic or Republican, to really handle Israeli hotheads, to bring about the changes that need to happen in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict to resolve that thing?
All right, Howard?
Well, a friend of mine who's Israeli criticized me last week for not adequately criticizing Jewish extremists. And my answer to him, which I actually haven't sent him yet, is this, that Israel has one quarter the population of just one Islamic city, Cairo. The number of people killed in the Palestinian versus Israeli conflicts is roughly a 20th of the number of people killed in Algeria every year in Islam versus Islam conflicts, or roughly a seventh of the number of people killed every year in the Kashmiri conflicts in India between Muslims and non-Muslims. And I think that a country that has a population less than the size of most major American cities, and that's Israel, is a distraction, is a radical, radical distraction. Now, I have a friend who is the head of the Free Muslim Coalition Against Terrorism, and he feels that if we solve the Israeli versus Palestinian problem, that all of the problems between the West and Islam will go away. But hey, there was no Palestine or problem of the sort. There was no Israel until 1948. And guess what we had nonstop from 630 AD until 1948? Massive, massive global wars between Islam and the West, including some of the biggest naval battles you have ever, ever seen in your life.
And so you're saying the Israeli-Palestinian problem is just a distraction. It wouldn't change anything, even if it was solved tomorrow.
It's like the magician waving the handkerchief over in one hand so you won't see him palming something in the other.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Howard Bloom. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Howard? And
hi.
Art. Hi.
Fine, sir.
Calling from South Florida, actually Southeast Florida.
Yes, sir.
We're all prepared for the hurricane season already. And my question is basically, I've got a few of them. One, you mentioned that there have been over 100 extinctions, yet I happen to be a college professor of environmental science, that there have been 5 mass extinctions, and we're in the middle of the 6th. And that one, of course, is caused by man. Can you kind of expound on the other 100 or so mass extinctions?
Well, if you do what I do, and I'm sure you do, and we both probably read Science Magazine every single week, and if you go back through their series of articles on this subject, you'll find that they outline 148 mass extinctions in the figure of only 6. But 6 is the figure for the really huge mass extinctions, the humongous mass extinctions. 5 is not a figure that I would have seen anywhere. I'm sorry. 6 is the canonical figure. But there are 148, and if you're not aware of that and you're a college professor and you're in a field where you should be aware of this, then something is horribly wrong. Just as I say, do a search in the pages of Science Magazine, which, as you know, is the definitive, that Science and Nature are the two definitive magazines in our field.
Right. I have done that, and I don't really kind of agree with them, but I do agree that there have been minor extinctions. But be that as it may, my other question is, living in what's called the sunshine state, and with the cost of PVC dropping, as the photovoltaic cells,
right,
I still don't see the use of them as much as they should be. I see them as being available to use the solar power to break down through electrolysis seawater to hydrogen and oxygen so that we can use them for fuel cell technology.
And well, that's an interesting idea.
And the waste product that we get back is water.
I think it's a very good idea. I was very skeptical about hydrogen power because, in my experience, it takes burning coal, burning oil, and burning traditional fuels, and it takes nuclear power in order to make hydrogen. So it's just a matter of moving the mess someplace else. But in the work that I've been reviewing over the last 2 weeks, it's become obvious that there are more and more alternative energy forms or ways of using alternative energy to produce hydrogen. And that's one of the things that you're pointing at, and I am behind you 100% on that.
Okay. And my question is also, my feeling is that the hybrid vehicles that we're currently seeing now are at best a stopgap measure and at worst just a hoodwinking of us by the auto companies and the oil companies.
Well, I tend to agree with you on that, too, because it's going back to oil. And I would much rather see something that's produced by alternative energy, and your idea of using alternative energy to produce hydrogen and then using hydrogen to produce to power cars. And so, the cells that we're using these days are not terribly efficient, as you know. But nonetheless, using fuel cells or using any other form of power that depends on, for example, solar or that depends on biomass, I'm all for it. I'm behind you 100%.
Well, you've certainly changed your opinion on hydrogen since we last did a show, Howard.
Yep.
very good. All right. Howard Bloom is my guest in the nighttime, which is where we do our very best work. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and my guest is Howard Bloom, and he's all yours for this next segment. By the way, if you want to get hold of me, it's artbell@aol.com or artbell, that's A-R-T-B-E-L-L, at mindspring.com. Either one of those will get directly to me, and a lot of the material that you send, I use on the air. That's artbell@aol.com or artbell@mindspring.com. Incidentally, tomorrow night, one of the most dynamic speakers on the kind of subjects we generally cover here on Coast to Coast AM, Dr. Roger Lear, is going to be my guest. That's one you don't want to miss, Dr. Roger Lear, tomorrow night. Now, Howard Bloom has a couple of books, The Lucifer Principle and The Global Brain, or Global Brain, actually, The Evolution of the Mass Mind from the Big Bang to the 21st Century. And The Lucifer Principle, A Scientific Expedition into the Forces of History. How are your books doing, Howard?
Well, they're doing very well, Art. I designed them to last for 15 years, and apparently they're doing, though they're younger than that, something like that. And I've been asked to do another edition of The Lucifer Principle soon, but frankly, and this is a very unhumble opinion, but the book is more topical today than it was when it was originally written.
All right, good deal. Here we go. Somebody, I think, in opposition, you're on the air Coast to Coast AM with Howard Bloom. Good morning.
Yeah, is this me?
Yeah, it's you.
Hey, just a little dispute with you, Howard. I agree with everything you're saying there, but the submarines that Pakistan has,
right?
They're diesel-electric. They're only 1,700 tons. It wouldn't even... Cruise missiles, maybe, could attack a carrier or something, but... I don't think our cities would be in danger of that.
Well, are we talking about the same submarines? Are we talking about the Augusta 90Bs?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
You know that
the Pakistani commander, and I don't have his name, but the one who piloted the crew that took the first submarine from Cherbourg Harbor over to Karachi, and then whose crew was involved in building the second one in Karachi, said... in no uncertain terms, that those submarines were built for second strike nuclear capability.
Well, I mean, I have a book right here, and I mean, I'm not, you know,
what
big deal here.
You might have a book that I don't have.
Which book, sir?
This is Submarines of the World, Illustrated Directory of by David Miller.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a big deal. I mean, the cruise missiles, they don't have the range, you know. I mean, if you're talking intercontinental...
No, they only have a range of 135 miles, but when you've got 65% of the world's population living that distance away from the shoreline...
Right, but, it's going to have to come up. It can't go very far on the ocean without nuclear power. It's going to have to surface.
Well, have you looked at the range?
Yeah, it actually says right here, the performance in the range here.
Right.
The range underwater is only 250 miles.
Well, if you've got the full range of the, it's a 10,000 nautical mile, which is 11,000 mile range.
Not for the missiles. See, that's what I disagree on. Is the cruise missiles, even the Tomahawk, can only go.
The cruise missiles only have a range of 135 miles. But the ship, what have you got in terms of the range of the submarine itself?
Oh, itself. Well, that's what I'm saying. That itself, it's going to be diesel electric, so it's going to have to go on diesel power. It's not going to be able to go around the world. No diesel submarine really can.
Actually, I think he was talking something about a newer peroxide.
Well, it's the Mesma.
Yeah, that's the air and
independent propulsion. I would imagine the Mesma's more energy-intensive. It's just that you'll go, instead of looking at a book, which is outdated, go up to the DCN site, where DCN itself, the company that makes these, advertises its characteristics. And you'll see that the range is advertised as 10,000 nautical miles, which, as I said, is 11,000 miles.
Okay, well, no problem. I mean, you got your facts, and I say it's way too small.
Well, the reason it's better, you know, now that we've got online, the reason it's better to go online is especially with rapidly evolving technologies like this.
They got the submarines in, it says 79 and 80. So, I mean, they got the one you're building, it hasn't even come out yet. It says 2006.
The 90D, it's constantly being updated.
All right. Doozy said, and check the DCN site and see what they say there.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. First time caller line, you're on the air with Howard Bloom. Hi.
Hi. Charlie in Connecticut.
Yes, Charlie.
Hi, Charlie.
I was wondering, Howard, how we could increase our military personnel.
Huh.
I had an idea of maybe possibly giving full citizenship to mercenaries and give them all the benefits that our boys have. And you don't need quite so many people up on the line. You need a lot more people behind the lines anyway.
All right, Howard, we are having a problem right now with recruitment.
Oh, it's a big one right now, especially this week.
Yeah.
And the idea of giving mercenaries full citizenship disturbs me terribly because it reminds me of the days of the Roman Empire when the Romans got too lazy to do their own fighting and hired the Celts. They hired the Gauls, and those, and not just the Gauls, the Goths in particular. And when they became dependent on Gothic troops, those Goths in turn turned in on them and plundered them, destroyed them.
Mm-hmm. Not a good idea. Do you have any ideas on increasing recruitment?
I have a friend who's in charge of that for the military, and he's one of the most brilliant people that I know. And if he doesn't have ideas for it, I don't, except that I do think, again, one very important thing here that we sort of glossed over, and that is that the guy who wrote Founding Brothers, the book on the Founding Fathers of the United States,
mm-hmm.
said something in passing that should never have been said in passing, and it was that when we can create a form of government that made public opinion one of the major mainstays of our policy, or the major director of our policy, we gave an enormous power to an unnamed branch of government called the press. And I think the press has got to do a lot more to demonstrate to us that we do have to have eternal vigilance to have freedom, that if we do believe in these things that I marched for in the 60s and the 1970s, and that most of my friends on college campuses say that they believe in, we're sometimes going to have to fight for these things.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Howard Bloom.
Hi, yes, Mr. Bloom.
Hi.
Yes, I would like to talk about the point you brought up is that the press, the damage that they do to our own country, like with the report that we were flushing the Quran, that was a total false report, and they admitted that, and how that has caused deaths and riots as a direct influence over, you know, they're like our enemy. They're like, and they don't realize that we protect them, and if they, the press keep on, they're going to actually find themselves one day causing our country to go right down the tubes because of their hate for, you know, blame America and blame ourselves.
Their hate for what we are and their laziness.
Yes.
I mean, after all, what is the primary responsibility of both the press and a scientist? It's the truth at any price, including the price of your life. It means going diligently, using all the energy you possibly can use in order to find out truths and bring them to people's attention. And the people that I've worked with in the press over the course of the last 30 years do not have that kind of diligence at all.
You're right. Thank you very much for making that point.
You're very welcome. Thank you, caller. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Howard Bloom. Hi.
Hi, Art. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I just wanted to say to Howard, I am truly saddened by his remarks regarding global warming and species extinction. It is an established scientific consensus that global warming is occurring, and my question on that subject would be, do you suggest that we wait till our coastal cities are flooded and tropical diseases have spread beyond their historic regions, and there's a general devastation occurring to the population? And secondly, regarding...
Well, one thing at a time. Let him respond. Howard?
Okay, I agree with you. There is a vast scientific consensus on global warming. However, no matter what we do, no matter how many Kyoto treaties we sign, the fact is that the carbon dioxide level on this planet has sometimes been 200 times what it is today. By one estimate, 10,000 times what it is today. And no matter how many Kyoto treaties we sign, and no matter how good we are about not pouring carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, one of these days, one way or the other, these sea coasts of ours are going to change, and they are going to change dramatically. And that's where we should be focusing our attention.
I agree. But I think we can also take steps to mitigate the amount of fossil fuel emissions into the atmosphere so we don't trigger something like an abrupt climate change.
Is it your position, Howard, that it doesn't matter how much we put in because, as you mentioned in the past, it's been so prolific?
Well, it's not my position, but again, if you go back to how we both feel about oil and the fact that we have to get away from oil, the fact is that every technology that I favor gets us away from the hydrocarbon emissions that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Caller?
And regarding the species extinction issue, whether there have been 6 or 143 periods of species extinction, it is an irrefutable fact that over the last 50 years, 300,000 species of plant and animal have become extinct, and it's estimated 3 to 30,000 species become extinct every year as a consequence of mankind. And my goodness, do we want to live in a biological wasteland?
No, I don't want to live in a biological wasteland.
So my point is that we need to wake up and take decisive action now to mitigate our damage to the environment, or we're going to be leaving future generations of people with a planet that's devoid of everything that we love about it now.
Well, that's possible. And I certainly don't want to leave a wasteland to the generations that come beyond us. It's just that we have to recognize the fact that one way or the other, with this or without us, wasteland will come. And that's what we really have to be prepared for.
Thank you.
All right. You're very welcome. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Howard Bloom. Good morning.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes. Hi. There's one Japanese car manufacturer that I know of that has a battery gas combination car, and I'm wondering why the American automakers haven't jumped on that. Not only gone full ahead with it here in the United States, but also around the world.
Well, that's the hybrid car, right?
Yep.
And American automakers have been far more slow than the Japanese, to say the least. The Japanese have the Prius out there, and it's selling like crazy. And the hybrid cars that we're working on haven't even hit the streets yet. So you're right, we're being very sluggish. However, a caller who called in a few minutes ago and said that the hybrid car was just a stopgap was also right. We've got to go beyond that.
We're still turning out U.S. SUVs. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Howard Bloom. Hi.
Yeah, hello?
Hello.
Yeah, I've never called one of these stations before, but I listen to you every once in a while. I drive a truck. I'd like to ask a question. Have you guys ever heard of anything like a solar-powered vehicle backed up by, like, maybe a wind generator type deal? And I'll get off the phone and
well, that's an interesting idea. Have you heard of any such thing?
No, I'm not a rocket scientist or anything like that. It's just I got these ideas floating in my head, and it's like, why can't we come up with an idea like that, and that would solve the problem of the battery issue? I mean, when you start a car, we all know that the alternator is basically what runs your car along with the gas.
Right.
That the battery is just used for starting the vehicle.
Right.
So I don't know why they don't come up with that. I mean, to me, that would solve the solution of the hydrogen deal and the battery issue.
Well, I think you're moving in the right direction. That kind of creativity and innovation is what's going to get us somewhere.
Yeah, and hopefully nobody won't steal my idea, but
all right, caller, thank you very much. Well, he's got ideas rattling around in his head. That's a good thing. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Howard Bloom. Hello.
Hi, Art Howard. This is Peter calling from Northern Arizona.
Hi, Peter.
I heard you mention briefly about stem cell embryos and fertility clinics, which I take issue to. I believe personally that Throwing away embryos is wrong for the embryo and for the people that are doing that. Do you believe that the U.S. should try to lead a forum discussing this issue? It's my personal belief that an individual human life has ultimate value simply because it's human. What do you think of that?
Well, it's very hard to determine when it becomes human. And I think that killing a single human life is absolutely unacceptable, if that helps. But it is very difficult to determine at what point an embryo becomes human.
That it is. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Howard Bloom. Hi.
Hello. My name is Chris. I'm calling from, I'm presently down in Texas right now.
Okay.
Hi, Chris.
For 3 points, I wanted to point out that, you know, years ago they developed methane gas converters. They have one down here in Sweetwater, Texas, where they take the defecation from animals and they comprise it into gas conversion. And a friend of mine was in Johns Hopkins University and developed a methane gas converter for the family of four to sustain itself with gas, although it would be a substantial little time bomb under every house, but it seems that a methane gas converter could greatly reduce the use of gas. The other point was hydrogen being used as it is today in the submarines that we currently use desalinators to develop oxygen inside the submarines. They also excrete the hydrogen out into the water. Why couldn't we get something smaller like that desalinator and install it in a car and utilize the greatest resource we have in this world, which is water? Put water in a tank and have the hydrogen and oxygen separated out and burn the car on hydrogen, although you would still need oil to lubricate the engine and the
and you'd still need a power source. What would you use as your power source for the separation of hydrogen and the oxygen?
Let's go back to methane, though. Methane certainly is a powerful energy source, pretty much unexplored, isn't it?
Well, it's been explored a lot in Europe, and, you know, it's not that it's underexplored, it's undertapped. I think that your caller's making a good point, you're making a good point. Methane is just there, almost there for the taking. And it only takes throwing a couple of bacteria into the mix to turn out an awful lot of methane. So it's very underexplored.
Okay. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Howard Bloom. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing? Derek from San Pedro on 640.
Yes, sir.
Hi, Derek.
Hey, how you doing? My question is, do you think the Seawolf or the improved Los Angeles class has a chance against the Augusta?
You know, all I know is what the Navy tells me via its website. And the Navy tells me that it's going to have a very, 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 very hard time detecting these Augusta 90Bs.
One other question real quick, please.
What do you think the Seawolf will do against the Augusta 90B?
Excuse me?
You can't fight one submarine with another unless you can detect the submarine you're going up against, right?
Mm-hmm. One other question real quick, please.
Very quickly, yes.
With the new base closure bill, if you looked it over, did you notice that there's 9 attacked submarines being relocated to Guam? Do you think this has anything to do with in response to what's going on in the world right now?
Well, I think that it's a response to the situation developing in Korea. There's a very great deal being relocated to Guam right now. Are you on top of that, Howard?
Well, what I've been watching is the Chinese threat to Taiwan. I think that those are two things that we're concerned about right now.
Well, there's a gigantic buildup on Guam.
Yeah.
We're moving F-15s, we're moving stealth aircraft all to Guam, and of course it could, I suppose, serve either purpose, but it's obvious that we know something's coming.
Well, something does seem to be coming, but one of the things that's concerned me is the sunburn missiles that the Chinese have been making, and those sunburn missiles can take out aircraft carriers, and we've only got 11 aircraft carriers. They carry nuclear warheads, too, and they skim at a few feet above the water surface in zigzag patterns, so they're very hard to stop. So what I'm looking at, in addition to the North Korean problem, is the problem of losing our entire force projection capability in attempting to defend Taiwan.
Do you think that we would attempt to defend Taiwan?
I think we'd have a very serious crisis of decision on our hands. And because if Taiwan goes, then Japan knows that it's going to go, and we
I'm not sure that's true. I think the Chinese regard Taiwan as theirs and not Japan necessarily, though I could be wrong. Howard, we're out of time.
It's been a pleasure.
It has been a pleasure, my friend, and we'll do it again soon.
Okay, thanks, Art.
Have a great night.
Have a good night, too.
Take care. Tomorrow night, everybody, Dr. Roger Lear is here from the high desert. This night, though, that's it. I'm Art Bell. Have a great night. Later.
Midnight in the desert, shooting stars across the sky. This magical journey will take us on a ride. Filled with the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it till tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you?